You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale! Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe.
Hello and welcome to the Delirious Nomads podcast. I'm Matt Bacon here with Christopher Santos, celebrity chef and host of the whole shindig. And our guest this week is his dear friend, my new friend, comedian Brad Williams. How are you today, Brad?
Hey, we met like a few seconds ago. You know nothing about me. I don't know if I'm ready to take this jump in our relationship, man.
That's acceptable. I was rolling the dice, but I'll hang my head in shame.
Yeah.
Christopher, what am I in trouble?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I was just looking at your name on the thing on Zoom where it's Christopher Santos. I
tried to change that and it just always reverts back. I'm doing something wrong.
I'm going
to
call you Christopher in person from now on. Really fuck with your head.
You do it on Zoom. Don't do it when you're actually in front of me.
Anyway, what's going on, Brad?
This is like a nomad podcast, which makes absolute sense because in the past week, I've been to 4 states, like 7 flights, something like that. It's been a whirlwind. And not necessarily states where you're like, rock star life. Like, it started off that way. Last week, I flew to Vegas, did a show in Vegas on Wednesday, Thursday, day in Vegas. Friday, Omaha, Nebraska, jealous. Of course you are. That's Friday, Saturday. Sunday, we drive from Omaha to, I don't even know the name of the town, but it's in Iowa. It was the Diamond Joe Casino, wherever that is. And then Monday we drive, because we're in Iowa and we're like, well, we're in Iowa. What should we do in Iowa? On Monday, we drive from the casino like 4 hours to the site where the Field of Dreams movie was shot, the Field of Dreams baseball field, had a catch on the Field of Dreams baseball field.
That's awesome.
And then drive 5 hours to Omaha, Nebraska, where we hop on a plane and fly back to Los Angeles. So it's been a whirlwind weekend.
Is that repeating itself this coming weekend? I know you've been quite busy for the last few months.
Oh, yeah. Thankfully, this weekend is just one location. I'm flying to Denver, Colorado, doing shows there and one spot. So no crazy travel days. And Denver is like a 3-hour, two and a half hour flight from Los Angeles. So real easy. This weekend's nothing. Last weekend was nuts.
How have your flight experiences been?
So far, so good. I haven't had anything too crazy happen. I've seen a lot of videos online of like people just like, I don't know if they've been cooped up too long and they don't know how to act once they get back around people. The only fight I've seen wasn't in the air. It was my first Dodger game back. I went to the Dodgers versus the Houston Astros. First time the Astros were back in Dodger Stadium since their scandal and there was crowds and someone was wearing an Astros jersey. Every time the Astros did something good, they would stand up with their girlfriend and like present themselves to the crowd. Like, look at us. We are so grand. And that's when you saw the Michelada come flying in from like 20 rows back and didn't hit them. Oh, hit a Dodger fan next to them, and then that Dodger fan fought the other Dodger fan, and I'm just sitting there like, okay, welcome back. So this thing be damned. Let's go.
Yeah, I never had seen fights at baseball games before this year, but both baseball games I've been to this year, I've seen fights. I was like, okay, this is what we do now.
Yeah, it only took one year of not really socializing and being out in public for us to completely forget what to do. And now, like, we're acting in real life like we all used to act just on Twitter, where we're not thinking like there's any repercussions for our actions.
Yeah, it's crazy. I've been seeing a lot of fights, not just at baseball, but preseason football, like all the sporting events.
My favorite fight that I saw in preseason football was the one where, like, one guy was kind of yelling stuff, but not really. And then just you see a different angle and you see a woman just randomly throw a beer and just soak a group. And then that group all started fighting, like, because they all thought the other threw the beer at each other, and you just see the woman walk away slow motion, like a Quentin Tarantino movie. And she just, like, lit something on fire behind her. She's like, I'm out of this. And I'm just like, wow, that's badass.
Reminds me of the time I got pepper sprayed trying to break up a fight between two groups of complete strangers. But one of the girlfriends thought I was part of, you know, her boyfriend's opponent group.
Oh,
point blank range. Pepper spray to the face. It was awesome.
And then you've had quite the experiences with, like, spices, obviously, in the kitchen. So, like, do you get pepper sprayed in the face and go, could be a nice rub? Or are you pepper spray and you're like, oh, fuck, this is horrible?
I've eaten whole ghost peppers with the stem and seeds and all. I did that on stage at the New York City Hot Sauce Expo. I went up there. There was, like, 2,000 people that were getting ready to watch the Guinness World Book of Records ghost chili pepper eating contest. And I went up there to work the crowd. Hey, it's Celebrity Chef Chris Santos. So you all excited for this, right? Not realizing that it wouldn't take long for them all to start chanting, eat one, eat one, eat one.
Oh, God.
And then so I finally grabbed one and they're like, stem and all, stem and all.
Oh, geez.
And this video out there, or I have it even, it was rough. I eat a lot of hot food. That was rough, and pepper spray was horrible. So there was no spices, there's no cooking thing I could come up with there.
Yeah. So that's not going to be the new secret ingredient in a basket on Chopped?
I hope not.
You have soy sauce, filet mignon, pepper spray,
yeah,
and a roadside flare. Yeah. Go.
So for the listener, you know, this has been primarily a heavy metal podcast. We really like to, as I explained to you when we spoke, you know, interview people who are on the road a lot and whatnot. And so I guess one of my questions is, you know, so for people who don't know, because if they're following us because they're heavy metal fans, Brad's is a comedian with quite an accomplished career. He's had a couple of Netflix specials and a couple of Showtime specials, right? Is that right?
Yeah, correct.
Which is a pretty big deal in the comedy world. And he tours all the time. That's how we met, actually. My wife got me tickets to see him because he was one of my favorite comics, and we met after the show and we became fast friends. But touring now, besides the obvious masks and things of that nature, touring now versus when you were going out on the road in, like, say, 2018-19, what's different, what's crazy, or, you know?
Yeah, obviously, like you said, mask on flights and stuff like that. For me personally, I've seen that the audiences that are coming out to shows are so amped and so ready for a show. They've been cooped up, or they've been told, like, it's either the I've been cooped up, I'm finally vaccinated, I'm going out mentality, which is good, or it's the fuck the vaccine, there's microchips in it, and I'm going out to defy everyone, so I'm going to have a lot of fun anyway mentality. And right. Both combined make for really, like, amped audiences that are really happy to be there. I'm coming up in October, it'll be 18 years in comedy. I've done plenty of shows in front of audiences that didn't want to be there, that for whatever reason, either they got comp tickets, their date dragged them out, or it was, like, at a sports bar and we just started a comedy show and they didn't expect one to happen. That was, like, back in my early days. And when you get an audience that doesn't want to be there, it's not impossible, but it's really hard to win them over. But now, like, everyone wants to be there. The audiences are so thankful. I do meet and greets afterward now. I take photos with people and they're just excited that they get to experience that. So for me personally, the crowds have been awesome. They've been really polite. I mean, knock on wood, because I'm going out again this weekend, but they've been great. This has been one of the coolest times. And and if you ever don't want to go out for something, now you just have the excuse, COVID. Like now you don't have to be a dick or anything. You just go, ah, COVID. And then people go, okay, we'll respect that. We'll respect that. And it's fine.
So you mentioned 18 years. Why stand up? How did that start?
It's weird. I feel like I've been trained to be a comedian from childhood. Cause for those of you who don't know me, I'm a dwarf, a little person, a person of short stature. If you're listening to this just on audio and you can't see it, you can't tell by my voice. I don't come on podcasts. I don't sound like a little person. I'm not like, oh, come on, Chris Santos, Randall, Nomad podcast. We're going to have a good time. Like, we're not, like, that's not happening. So my parents are both tall. I'm the only dwarf in my family. And my dad, when he raised me, he kind of told me, like, hey, kids are going to make fun of you when you're growing up. So rather than try to protect me and hide me, he was like, let's armor you up. So he and I would write comebacks together. So like when people would make fun of me, I would have comeback insults and jokes and things like that. And like the first day of school, I got sent to the principal's office because a kid, this is like kindergarten, and he walks up and goes, ha ha, you're little. And I went, ha ha, your mom doesn't live with your dad anymore. And I grew up in Orange County, so that's a pretty good chance that that's going to be the case in that kid's family life. So I got sent to the principal's office for having the better joke. So that's like how it got ingrained in me. And I was always taught, like, hey, when you meet people, crack a joke immediately, do a joke, make people feel comfortable to be like, make people understand that you know you're a little person. And I do this to this day when I'm up on stage. You gotta do a quick short joke, So the audience doesn't just sit there like, does he know? It's like, yeah, I know, I'm aware. So you do that. But then actually getting into stand-up, it was Father's Day 2004, I want to say. Yeah, 2004, Father's Day weekend. And I took my dad out to the Bray Improv to see a Carlos Mencia show. And he's up on stage and he starts making midget jokes, and half the audience is laughing, and the audience that's sitting by me is like, no, don't laugh. And they're like looking down like, ah, like, ah, like they're very uncomfortable. And he doesn't realize that I'm there. And he notices the audience is weird. And he goes, why are you guys weird? What is one of them here? And I just raised my creepy little hand in the air. Like, yeah, I'm here. And he called me up on stage. He's like, oh my God, Dwarf, let's talk to you. So I run up on stage. I've done like school plays, but that's pretty much it to that point.
So how old are you at this point?
I'm 19.
Okay.
And 37 now. There you go. So he starts asking me questions, and I answer the questions honestly. I wasn't trying to be funny. He asked me really basic stuff like, okay, what do you do for a living? And at the time, I was working at Disneyland. So I go, I work at Disneyland. And then the audience laughed. And then I just looked at the audience and I went, fuck you, I'm not one of the seven. And the audience laughed at that. And literally it was that moment where I go, oh, this was cool. I said something and a sold out audience, like I think the Bray Improv at that time held like 350 people. And so like 350 people, I just made laugh with a thought in my head. And that is an incredibly addictive feeling and an amazing feeling. I've never done heroin, but from what I've heard from my friends who have, the moment they do it, it's like instant, like, oh, this is what every waking moment of my life is going to be about. And that was kind of what it was like for stand-up. Like when I was on stage making people laugh, I was like, oh, yeah, this is my life now.
To be clear, we are not advocating heroin for our listeners, right?
No, just black tar. If you're going to do it, black tar. No, I'm kidding. Of course, don't do any of that stuff.
Okay, so that happened. And then now you're here with all these comedy specials under your belt, and you're one of the busiest touring comedians in the country.
You were about to say biggest. You were about to say biggest, and then you caught yourself. You're like, busiest. Busiest good improv move right there, Santos.
How did you climb the ladder? And that's not a joke about your small arms or anything.
It's a lot of things. Everyone always looks for like one moment to be like, oh, that thing. And then the next day you were rich, famous, and successful. It's like, it's not that. There's there's a ton of moments. There's a ton of little moments. So like after that initial moment where I went on stage and I was like, I need to do this. There was going to do my first open mic, doing well, going doing open mics for a year and a half, just driving God knows how long for absolutely no money for 3 minutes of stage time. And then fast forward to a year and a half after I started, after I had that first thought, I'm going to do stand-up comedy. I went to see him and see a show again. He saw me before the show and he goes, oh, you're that dude from that night. And I go, yeah, I've been doing stand-up now. He's like, oh shit. He goes, do you want to open up my show tonight? Let's see what you got. And I'm like, yeah, let's do that. And I'm doing like coffee shops before then. And now it's at the Ontario Improv, which is 400 people. And so I go on, I do about 5 minutes, three to five, somewhere in there. And I go off stage and Mencia goes back up on stage. It's not his turn to go on stage yet, but he goes on stage and says, hey, that was Brad. Did you guys like Brad? And the whole audience, yeah. And he goes, okay, you just made a very important decision for me. My current opening act is ready to headline. He's ready to go. He's going to be a great comic and he's going to move on. So I've been looking for a new opening act. You guys really like Brad. So from the stage, he goes, Brad, you want to be my new opening act? And I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go. So the week after that, we were doing the Fox Theater in Bakersfield. And that's like 1,300 people. And like it was off on the road, and he had just gotten the show Mind of Mencia. So then he put me on that show. So like you have that moment that kind of launches everything. We do 4 seasons of the show and subsequent tours. Once those are done, I kind of move out on my own, started headlining like low level rooms and like just like B and C rooms, because there's comedy clubs and there's comedy clubs, you know. Like there's the Cellar in New York, which is like the best, one of the best rooms in the country. And then I'll do a fictional comedy club. There's the Chuckle Hut in Bismarck, North Dakota. That's not exactly the A room. I didn't want to actually put down a real comedy club because they're all places where we work and they're all valuable. So do that. I get on a radio show out here in Los Angeles. It's not on anymore, but it was called the Kevin and Bean Show. It was the morning show out here. Very, very influential. I did really well on that. They then put me on their big comedy show, which I still have the lineup somewhere. They're like, on this show, it was Bob Saget, Jim Jeffries, Jay Moore, Tim Minchin, Bill Burr, Eddie Izzard, and me. One of these is not like the other ones. But I did my spot, and at the end of my set, I gave one of the morning show DJs, a DJ named Lisa May, I got her up on stage and gave her a lap dance. Crowd goes nuts, standing ovation. This is at the old Universal Amphitheater. So this is like 5,000 people, 4,000 or 5,000 people. And Jay Moore is on after me. Jay Moore walks up on the stage and tells the audience, he goes, all right, let's be honest. After Brad Williams, we're all here playing for second place. And which was really cool of him to say, because comics don't like to give props to other comics, especially when they're on the same show. So he did that. And once he did that, that was another moment that like word spread of like, holy shit, who's this Brad Williams guy? Because those comics started talking about it and the radio show talked about it. So that slowly launched me into the first Showtime special, which is called Fun Size. That launched into the second Showtime special, Daddy Issues. That launched into the Netflix half hour, The Degenerates, and then appearances on Rogan's podcast, on Your Mom's House, which is Tom Segura's podcast, doing Something's Burning with Bert Kreischer, where I got really drunk and fell off a stool. The video is on YouTube. Enjoy it. So like all these things had really big fan bases and it all kind of snowballed onto itself. So that's kind of how it progressed.
You know, so you were an open mic comedian before going on to open for Carlos Mencia.
Yeah.
What that means for most open mic comedians is they really only have like 5 minutes of material.
Yes.
Like that they like really believe in. And you told me off air that that was kind of your case. So how did you go from having like the 5 minute open mic set to the, I don't know, 30, 40 minute or whatever it was, like opening slot set in a week?
I was only required to do like 10 minutes. And how you do it is you just throw shit at the wall. You just keep going. Here's the best sort of analogy I've ever heard in terms of how you create material. Is your first, and by the way, any open mic comic that says, yeah, I got 30 minutes. No, you don't. You have five, maybe three. That's like actually good. Like I'm talking about like good stuff. Yeah, anyone can talk for 30 minutes. Anyone can talk for an hour. It doesn't mean it's going to be good. But so the best way that I ever heard described in terms of how a comedian writes material is their first 10 years is you're just figuring out kind of what's funny. And you're building your joke machine. Like for me, I'm building my Brad Williams joke machine for like the first 10 years. Once you've done 10 years about, you now have your Brad Williams joke machine. Now I can drop in any topic into the Brad Williams joke machine. And I know how a Brad Williams joke will come out. I know how that's going to sound. I know what that's going to, I know the beats of it. So like, it just takes time. And that's one of the beautiful parts about comedy and why so many comedians respect each other once you get to a certain level is we all know that no one just jumped on stage and had an hour of hilarious stuff right off the bat. Like everyone had to go through that grind of writing material and trial and error and bombing. If any comedian's like, I never really bombed, that means you're still bombing. Like, because we've all bombed. We've all done that. No one's gotten through this unscathed.
What do you do when you're bombing?
Back when I first started, I would panic. And like, I'd go full physical. Like, I would do a cartwheel when I was bombing. I would like run around the stage. I would like talk to people in the audience. I'd do crazy stuff, anything possible to try to get them back. Now, like I'm almost 18 years in, now when I bomb, and when something's not working, to me, it's more like a math problem. Like, oh, it didn't work. Wait, let's fix this. Or like I'm engineering where it's like, there must be a gear somewhere that didn't work. So like I'm adjusting in my head and I'm like, okay, what could I do now? Why did that joke not work? It usually works. Did the comedy club just drop checks? Is that why they're not paying attention? Did someone say something over here? Is someone being distracting? Is there a waitress that's being a little too loud? Like, what's happening? Does this audience like dirty jokes? Did I say a dirty joke? And maybe they like clean jokes and I got to kind of clean it up a little bit. Like now it's a math problem in my head. I don't really panic anymore when I bomb. Because after 18 years, it's like, okay, I know I'm funny. I know I'm good at this. I've had enough wins.
How do you bomb these days if people are coming to see you specifically?
You bomb because you try something new and it didn't work. I tried something new a few weeks ago. It was a Caitlyn Jenner is running for governor joke and didn't work. It just flat out didn't work. Because the thing about comedy is that like as a chef, Chris, you can make something in your own kitchen or in the kitchen of the restaurant and try it and go, oh, that's good. We'll probably like that. But as a comedian, the only way to see if something's good is to go up on stage and try it and see if the audience likes it. Like I could tell my friends and they'll be like, oh, that's funny, but it's not the same as a live audience that you have to make laugh. So I'm just constantly trying things and sometimes they work right away. And sometimes they don't work, but I always give it three times. So like if a joke bombs three times, it's a bad joke. But if it gets something, then it's like, all right, there's something there. I just have to tweak it. I have to take out a word, add a word, do a different take. Like punchlines are not the hardest part about comedy. Premises are the hardest part about comedy. Figuring out the setup, because a good setup, you'll get some laughs just based on the thought. Then it's just trial and error and finding that right punchline. So and it's scary bombing, don't get me wrong, but as I've done it enough, now I'm not scared by it. It's more like a challenge.
So to circle back on the Mencia thing, so you have 5 minutes of material, you need to have 10. And so you're basically just throwing stuff against the wall. And so, but were you leading with your 5 minutes or were you like interspersing it or how did you do that?
General rule of thumb, when you're trying new jokes, open with stuff that you know works, close with stuff you know works, try the new stuff in the middle. Because if it fails, you know you have something that'll work in the end, that'll save it. And you want to open with something that you know works because you want to get that ball rolling and you want to get the momentum of comedy going. Now, if you really want to know if your stuff is good or not, your new stuff, open with it, or close with it. But it's dangerous, especially closing. Because if you close and it doesn't work, you're like, well, crap. Like that was the ending. Like, you know, then you have to stay on stage longer to try to get them back. But yeah, it's just like joke writing is just trial and error. And when people come up to me and say, like, oh, I'm starting to do comedy, do you have any tips? Like, or how do you write material? One thing I always say is, okay, do you go to a party? When you go to a party, do you have like 3 stories that you always tell at a party? And usually they go, yeah. I go, okay, start with that. Those are your jokes, those 3 stories. Because you already know the beats. You know those stories have a beginning, middle, and end. You're comfortable saying them on stage. You're not trying to remember how the story goes. So like that's a good baseline where you start with the stories you've already told a million times. You know they work when you're at a party and you're meeting new people. And then from there, you can kind of just slowly grow out. And I mean, yeah, I watch TV. I watch the news. I read Twitter. And if I see something funny, I write it down.
On that topic, like, you know, as a chef, if I can make a great dish, I can serve that dish forever. Or if a band makes a great record, they can play those songs forever. But you as a comic, like, you can't do the jokes that were on the specials because everyone's heard them already.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Some comics that do like to play those hits, that is completely up to them if they haven't written a new joke since the Reagan administration. But that's up to you. But for me, yeah, I want to always have new jokes. I want to always have new material. And there are times I've got a couple of bits that people this past weekend, someone requested while I was on stage, they go, do the flag joke. So I was like, oh, well, all right. And I kind of looked at the audience like, do you know this bit? No. Okay. And I did it. The majority of the audience still laughed. It worked. And that guy got his joke. But I don't think people realize, like, when they request a joke or they want to hear a joke again, it's not going to hit you like it did that first time when you didn't know the punchline. You're more likely to just sit back and go, ah, this is nice. But it's not going to get that belly laugh that you got the first time you heard it. But yeah, no, it's usually the flag joke is something that people request. And I have a joke about small urinals that kind of went viral.
I fly a lot too. And every time I see one, I think of that joke. Every
God
time.
Goddamn right.
And then when I use it, because I have to, I'm looking over my shoulder for you.
Exactly.
How do you deal with hecklers?
It's always weird when people come up to me after the show who they were the heckler. And they walk up and go, hey, man, I really helped you out. No, you didn't. You did not help me. I was good. I was fine. Yeah, but we had a nice little moment there. Yeah, that's because I'm good. I spun your shit into gold. But it wasn't good. So just know that if you're thinking about heckling at a comedy show, you're not helping. You're not helping. If it turns out that you heckling gives the like one time I was at a Dave Attell show. Some lady yelled at him. Like he said something. She yelled out, fuck you, Dave. And Dave Attell just paused and went, all I heard was come, come, gurgle, gurgle. And the sound of a father crying. And like, that's one of the funniest things I've heard. That was a great comeback. But that's how good Dave Attell is. That had nothing to do with the heckler. So when I do get a heckler, there's a weird science to it. Where like if someone's talking just loudly, like it depends on the kind of heckle. If someone's just talking loudly, like they're distracted or they're drunk, one trick I do is I start talking softer. I don't try to overpower the show. I talk softer and I get quieter. And then sometimes the audience like self-polices. They go, oh shit. Like, I didn't know I was talking that loud. And they kind of realize it. And then they shut up. Now, if someone flat out comes at me, and says like, you're not funny or fuck you or whatever, that's almost more fun because now they're the aggressor, because you have to respond like one click above what they gave you. So if someone's just talking slightly loud, you can't respond with, shut the fuck up, you fucking asshole. Like now, whoa, where'd that come from? Like, you're a dick. So, and then the audience will recognize that. But if someone says, hey, Brad, fuck you. Okay, cool. You're the aggressor. Now I can come at you full. And one thing I've noticed when responding to hecklers, I have two techniques. One is I kind of deconstruct it where I go, why did you yell that out? And then the person's like, well, because, and then they're going to say something stupid. One technique is you ask the heckler a question, and eventually they're going to say something because they didn't plan this out too far. They had the one line that they were going to say, and then after that, they have no idea what the fuck's going to happen. So eventually they'll give themselves enough rope to hang themselves with. So that's one technique. The other technique, if it's like a drunk person that makes no sense, I found out that people respond to scolding. Like, I've flat out scolded someone before. So I was in Jacksonville, Florida, and my opening act was a female comic. She was great. I wish I could remember her name, but she was really funny. But before she even said anything to the microphone, she was the first one up. Before she even said hello, this dude in the front row just yells out, take your shirt off. And I was like, fuck this. And I ran out on stage and I grabbed the microphone and went, shut the fuck up. Why the fuck did you do that? You disrespectful piece of shit. She's a hardworking comic. She's funny as shit. And you're just being a drunk asshole. All your friends hate you. And I just scolded him. And you can see the look on his face like, oh, that's not supposed to happen. Like, he did not like it. And he was good the rest of the show. For some odd reason, if you scold someone, it reverts back to like being a kid and your mom or your dad catching you, and now they're yelling at you and you're like, ah, like, and you just stop. Complete side note, but kind of related. Someone was saying, like, I think like the San Antonio Spurs have a female assistant coach, and Greg Popovich got like thrown out or something, and she took over. And it was like the first time a female coach has ever, I think it was in the G League or the Summer League that just happened. Anyway, but I saw some people like, do you really think professional athletes can respond to a woman? I go, yeah, every one of those guys has a mother. Every one of those guys has a mother. Every one of those guys has a grandmother. And I guarantee you they respond to them. Like when you get scolded, there's some sort of, it reverts you to like childishness, and you're just like, oh fuck, I'm sorry. And so that's another one of my techniques.
So one last thing. So you and I were talking before the show, and I was telling you that a lot of our guests are heavy metal. You were in a punk band at one point, and no one really knows about this.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't know that. What kind of friend are you? How do you keep that from me?
Yeah. Because it was like, I was in high school, and this band came to play at our high school, and I just liked them. They were a funny band. They were a punk band. Like, and when I say punk, I mean like that late 90s, early aughts punk of like Simple Plan and basically guys that sang like this, like the whole kind of nasal. Adam Devine, we were talking one night and he told me like we got into that era of music, and he goes, yeah, every song from that era started with a season and then a location. So every song was like summer, the city, I saw you there. Like it was just, like, it's all that, like winter, your high school, like it like everything was that. And that's how this band sounded. The band was called Up Syndrome. I just thought that was a great name. Up Syndrome, that's funny. And they played like fun punk music. So I talked to him after the show. I'm like, I told him like, I can't play anything. What can I do for you guys? And they just looked and they saw me and they're like, all right, little person, we're a punk band. We can do this shit. So I essentially became like a hype man on stage. Like I would just run around during the shows, sing random lyrics, mostly choruses, like do cartwheels, crowd surf, wear funny outfits, and just enhance the show. We had a hit that got played on K-Rock out here in Los Angeles. It was called the Safe Sex Song. And I even had a rap that I jumped in, and I still know it. It started off, I'm the B to the R to the A to the D. Pick up the phone, you got a call from Booty. It's time to get it on, time to get crazy. Got a little dick, stamina amazing. First things first, no time to rehearse. Give me a rubber before the dwarf burst. I know you're getting horny, baby, that ain't wrong. But before you spread the thighs, condomize this dong. Word to your mother. Woo!
That was amazing.
It's the stupidest thing, but it was so much fun. And I really enjoyed being in a band and acting stupid on stage, and I didn't have to do really any work. All the musicians were doing all the work, and they were doing everything, but I still got to be like in the band, and it felt really good. They broke up. It's not like they're still touring. They're not like still opening for Yellow Card or something like that, but Up Syndrome. That was my Up Syndrome days.
We're going to let you go in a minute. We like to keep these short and sweet. We want to leave our listeners wanting more so we can have you back.
Awesome.
Personally, just from my own personal experience, I got about a 35 minute attention span when I listen to a podcast. So I kind of modeled behavior. It's science.
You don't do the Joe Rogan 3.5 hour pods? No?
No. 35, 40 minutes, we're out. We can have you back on. Matt, did you have anything else for my good friend, Brad?
I think we're good.
Brad, thank you so much. Where can people find you? Not on tour, but like what's your socials and all that?
Yeah. Please go to my website at Brad Williams Comedy, or just bradwilliamscomedy.com. And that has all my tour dates. I'm booked into August of 2022. So I got a tour. Follow me on Twitter at Funny Brad. I try to tweet jokes and dates and stuff like that. On Instagram at Brad Williams Comic, if you want to know what my life is like with my 72 pound pit bull and my daughter, the Asian dwarf baby, or the ADB, as we call her. Go on, enjoy. Tell me Chris Santos sent you. And I cannot recommend having the, what is it? The grilled cheese soup?
Your grilled cheese bites? Yeah.
Grilled cheese soup dumpling is one of the greatest things that's ever been invented in food. And it's at Beauty in Essex. So go to what? New York, LA, Vegas?
Yep, with more to come. But this is about you, and I didn't do a good job at the beginning selling this. This guy is absolutely hysterical. Before we met and became good friends, I would literally show all my friends his comedy specials, Fun Sized and Daddy Issues, and I want everybody over one by one, including my mom, but also all my degenerate friends. He's hysterical. So go check out those two comedy specials. Go to his website, find out where he's doing a show, and go see it. It is like. I've taken that one time in New York? 20 people?
Oh, God, to you? At least.
And they still talk about it. When's Brad going to come back? When can we see him again? So this is no joke. So check him out. Thank you for being here. We're going to have you back soon.
Always. Anytime you guys want me, I will be here. No problem.
Just like after a couple more months on the road, be like,
go.
Stories.
Let's make it happen.
All right, let's do it. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
All right. So that was awesome. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more. And above all, keep it heavy.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.